Chapter 9. The Fall of Percival Glyde by Walter Hartwright. I arrived at Blackwater Park the next day. I spoke to the gardener and Dr. Dawson, but neither of them knew the exact date that Laura had left Hampshire. There was also a short man in a black suit and a hat at the house. He refused to answer any of my questions. I think he was Sir Percival Glyde's lawyer's clerk. He must have been sent there to watch the house and note who visited it. Next, I decided that I needed to speak to Mrs. Clements, the older woman who had been Anne Catherick's only friend. I wrote to her relatives at Todd's Farm and asked them for her address. Then I went to her house in London. I explained to her that I had helped Anne escape from the asylum and that I had seen her again in the graveyard at Limeridge. She told me that when she and Anne had left Limeridge, they had gone to live in the north of England, in a place called Grimsby. It was far away from London, and Anne could live safely there without fear of being found and returned to the asylum. However, Anne soon started to feel very ill. A doctor examined her and said that it was a serious heart problem that could not be treated. After several months in Grimsby, Anne decided that she wanted to go to Blackwater Park and try to have a private meeting with Lady Glyde. Because Anne was so determined to go, Mrs. Clements offered to go with her. Anne met Lady Glyde and planned to return to the boathouse the next day to talk more, but Anne's illness became worse and she could not go. Wanting to help, Mrs. Clements went to the boathouse instead of Anne. But Count Fosco was there, not Lady Glyde. He said that he was waiting to give Anne Catherick a message from Lady Glyde. The message was that Anne should go and stay in London immediately because she was in danger and Sir Percival Glyde was looking for her. He said that once in London, Lady Glyde would then secretly travel to London to meet and speak with Anne. Mrs. Clements explained that Anne was very ill and could not possibly travel. The Count told her that he was a medical man and he offered to visit and treat Anne. The Count examined Anne and prepared some special medicine for her. He said that after 3 days she would be much better. Indeed, Mrs. Clements said the medicine helped Anne a lot. They met Count Fosco at the station on the third day and he helped them to get onto the train. Soon after travelling to London, a woman, this must have been Madame Fosco, called at the apartment where Mrs. Clements and Anne were staying. She asked Mrs. Clements to come with her to a hotel in London to arrange a meeting between Lady Glyde and Anne. Mrs. Clements went with the woman, Madame Fosco, in a carriage, but after a short distance, the woman asked the carriage to stop so that she could go into a shop. Mrs. Clements waited in the carriage for more than half an hour, but the woman disappeared and never returned. When Mrs. Clements arrived back at the apartment, Anne was gone. In the days that followed, Mrs. Clements desperately tried to find Anne, but from that time to this, she heard nothing more about her. "I am so sorry to hear this, Mrs. Clements," I told her.
"It's so sad. She was like my own child."
"Did you know Mrs. Catherick before Anne was born?" I asked.
"Yes," she replied. "For many years she had been working for the well-known Donthorne family at Varnick Hall, near Southampton. I met her when she then came to Welmingham. Her husband got a job as the clerk at Welmingham Church, so that's why they moved to the village. Mr. Catherick was a good person, but his wife, she wasn't. He had wanted to marry her for years and years, but she kept saying no, so he gave up. But then she suddenly came running back to him one day, and they married. Then, some months later, something awful happened. with her and another man, a man whom I think you know.
Sir Percival Glyde? I asked.
Yes, she replied.
I could feel my heart beating faster in my chest. Could this be the clue I was looking for?
Sir Percival Glyde came to the village after his father died and stayed in a hotel. He came to the village just a month or two before Anne was born, which was in June of 1827. Mr. Catherick saw his wife talking to Sir Percival Glyde in the street, and then he found lots of expensive gifts in her room. He suspected that the gifts had come from Sir Percival Glyde. The next day, Mr. Catherick found his wife inside the vestry of the church, whispering to Sir Percival Glyde. Of course, he now believed that his wife and the baronet had been having a relationship. He thought Sir Percival Glyde was in fact Anne's father, and that his wife had only wanted to marry him to hide this fact. Mr. Catherick was so furious that he hit the baronet, but Sir Percival Glyde fought back, and Mr. Catherick was quite badly hurt. He ran from the church, left the village that night, and was never seen again.
And what happened to the baronet? I asked.
He was heard arguing with Mrs. Catherick later that night, and then he left the village the next morning. But Mrs. Catherick stayed. Of course, everyone in the village thought she was a cheat and a liar. She always said that she was innocent and that there had been a terrible mistake. Because of that, she said, she would not leave her home. I think she was able to stay there because she got her money from Sir Percival Glyde.
Mrs. Clements seemed sure from the dates that Mr. Catherick could not be Anne's father. However, she also told me that Anne did not look at all like Percival Glyde. Nor did she look like her mother, who was dark-haired and had a round face.
Mrs. Catherick seemed to hate the child from the first moment. That's why I offered to look after the poor little girl, she told me.
I needed to see Mrs. Catherick, so I asked Mrs. Clements for her address, and I told her that I would return when I could tell her more about Anne. Several days later, I arrived in Welmingham. When I knocked on Mrs. Catherick's door, it was opened by a servant. I was shown into the sitting room, where I saw an old woman with grey hair and black clothes sitting in an armchair. "I have come to speak to you about your daughter," I began. "I think you know that she is missing."
"I do. Have you come here to tell me that she is dead?" she said coldly.
"Yes," I replied.
"Why have you come? What interest have you in me or my daughter?"
She said this without any change in her face or her voice. It was as though I had not told her that her daughter was dead. "I met Anne on the night she escaped from the asylum, and I helped her to reach a safe place," I told her.
"You shouldn't have done that," she told me. "Now, do you have any other reason for being here? If not, you can go."
I was shocked by how she spoke to me, but I was determined to do all I could to find out the information I needed. "I do have another reason. Your daughter's death has been used as a way to seriously harm a person who I am very close to. Two men are involved in what has happened. One of them is Sir Percival Glyde." I watched her face carefully as I mentioned that name to see if it had an effect on her, but I saw nothing, so I went on. "I came here because Sir Percival Glyde is, I believe, your enemy as well as mine." At last I saw a change in her face. I saw anger in her eyes, and her hands began to anxiously touch her dress. "And I want you to help me finish that man."
"Finish him yourself," she told me.
"You are afraid of him, aren't you?" I said. I understand that. He's a powerful man from a very good and well-known family, a baronet. I know some things about him, and I suspect many more. She suddenly started to laugh in a cruel, angry way.
A good family? Yes, especially on his mother's side.
She stopped laughing and then asked,
And what do you suspect?
I'll tell you what I don't suspect. I don't suspect him of being Anne's father. Her face told me that she was furious now. I went on. The secret between you both is not that secret.
Leave this house, she said angrily.
You were talking about a different secret when your husband found you whispering with him in the vestry of the church. I noticed that when I said the words, the vestry of the church, her face changed and the anger left her. Something else replaced it. Was it fear? I had shown her that I knew more than she had realised.
Go and never come back!
It was early afternoon when I left Mrs. Catherick's house and started to return to my hotel in Welmingham. As I was walking away, I heard a door close behind me. I turned around and saw a short man in a black suit walking quickly away from the house next to Mrs. Catherick's. It was the lawyer's clerk that I had seen at Blackwater Park. Could he have been sent by Sir Percival Glyde to watch and wait for me to come to see Mrs. Catherick? I thought about everything that I had seen and heard. One thing seemed strange and important. Why would Sir Percival Glyde arrange to secretly meet Mrs. Catherick inside Welmingham Vestry, where her husband actually worked? And when I said the words vestry of the church, Mrs. Catherick's anger disappeared, and fear came in its place. Why? I had suspected for a long time that Sir Percival Glyde had committed a crime that Mrs. Catherick knew about. The fear she had now shown told me that it was connected to the church. I also suspected that she not only knew about the crime, but could have been involved in it. Also, I remembered Mrs. Catherick's angry words about the baronet's family.
A good family? Ha! Yes, especially on his mother's side.
Perhaps there was some dark secret about Sir Percival Glyde's mother and family. I decided to go to the church the next day and look at all the documents there. Perhaps there would be a clue in the marriage register about Sir Percival Glyde's family. The next day, I walked to Welmingham Church. As I approached the church, I saw an older man and a young boy talking outside the back part of the building. I heard the boy saying to the older man,
So I stopped cutting the plants down when I saw him. He lit a lamp he was carrying and then went in and closed the door behind him.
I will have to tell the police about this, the older man said, with anger in his voice.
I walked up to them and asked if anything was wrong and if I could help.
Someone has stolen the key to the vestry, said the older man. I'm the church clerk, and someone took it from my house this morning. Whoever it was is inside there now, and they have locked the door.
I looked at the stone building. The vestry door was huge and was made of thick wood. There was one small window quite high up on the wall. I then noticed that there was something orange and bright moving behind the glass. The vestry was on fire. I ran to the big wooden door and touched it. It was hot. Then, to my horror, something or someone fell heavily against the inside of the door. A moment later, I heard the desperate sound of metal being moved against metal. I heard a man's voice from behind the door, shouting and screaming desperately for help.
It's the key, cried the clerk. He can't get it in the lock. He's trapped.
A young man suddenly appeared from some bushes not far away. Had he been hiding there? He fell to his knees and cried,
"Oh no, no, it's my master in there, Sir Percival Glyde!"
The screaming and the noises in the vestry stopped soon after. In that moment, I forgot everything I knew about Sir Percival Glyde, everything I felt about what he had done. All I knew was that there was a person in terrible danger and I wanted to save him from an awful death. By now, there were several more people in the churchyard watching what was happening.
"We need to break the door down," I shouted.
Together, we found a big, heavy piece of wood and a group of us used it to run at the door. After three attempts, we had done it. The door was open, but all we could see was fire and smoke. At that moment, the fire engine finally arrived from the village, but it was too late. The baronet was already dead. The next day, I sat in the hotel and wrote a long letter to Marian explaining what I thought had happened. I believed that Sir Percival Glyde was terrified that I had discovered his secret, which must be connected to the marriage register. I believed that he had stolen the vestry key and tried to remove or destroy the evidence. He probably locked the door behind him in case anyone saw what he was doing. He must have lit the lamp to see inside the dark vestry, but then he may have accidentally dropped it. Whatever had happened, Sir Percival Glyde was now gone. But so was my chance to return Laura's true identity to her by using Sir Percival Glyde's secret against him. Later that day, as I was sitting having a coffee at the hotel, a letter was given to me by the waiter. He told me it had been given to him by a woman. I opened the letter. It had no date, and it was not signed, but I knew exactly who it was from. It was from Mrs. Catherick, and it explained what had happened in the vestry and why.